Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Wherever you're listening right now, I appreciate you. Could be listening live, could be on your radio, could be listening to the podcast, could be doing whatever. Go to thepodcastpark.com. Chuck Oliver Show, you click on it, and it just shows up. It's magic. Every single day, subscribe, boom, there it is. But I appreciate everybody coming in again for your 2 hours of college football conversation, including at Ira Schoffel from warchant.com. Hour one coming up in about 10, Seth Emerson from The Athletic. Right now, I get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm Pain Relief Cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Well, since a transfer is more than a commitment and quarterback is more than – I'm going to start with the quarterback who transfer. Headline, ex-Colorado QB heads to Oregon State for final season. Be Sam Noyer, who's a quarterback, and he played safety for the Buffaloes a couple years ago. And then he went back to quarterback, and he is kind of a tough kid. He ran in the abbreviated season last year. He threw for 6 touchdowns, ran for a couple of more, and he has 1 year of eligibility left. He's from Oregon. And so he transferred back. He announced that on Friday night, but our show was already over. So this is an important deal. I love the Oregon State coaching situation. At Jonathan Smith, a former quarterback there, and he is a riser in this industry. And so Sam Noyer, I'm sure, is just that's a big part of it. So good for him. Heading back home, and again, with 1 season of eligibility, and he's going there with the expectation of being a starter. Headline, former Ohio State DB transfers to Nebraska. It seems that the road out of Lincoln is a lot more populated than the road into Lincoln when it comes to transfers, but you got a kid from Ohio State. He's a 5-star in Ohio State's 2018 class. Tyreek Johnson, he's a defensive back. Went to Ohio State as a safety. 6'1", 190 pounds. You're thinking, all right, big. He's 185 when he showed up. Thinking, all right, 6'1", we're going to put some meat. This kid's going to turn into a safety. Well, he's 6'1", 190 now, and they moved him to cornerback, and so that's kind of what he's going to be. But he has not played a whole lot. Didn't play much in 18 or 19, played in 4 games last year. He has up to 3 years of eligibility with Nebraska. And so that's not nothing for, again, a program that has not had many of the good headlines when it comes to the transfer portal. Headline, Tennessee adds 3-star running back from Louisiana. That's Dylan Sampson. Gesmar, Louisiana. 3-star running back, 5'10", 180. I told you he is the first commit Tennessee has to the next recruiting class since the return of on-campus recruiting. They had 5 before, but since June 1, since unofficial visits, and then you start to have an official visits, and now I've had a couple of weekends of those for sure. The first recruit for Tennessee since the return, the first commit since the return of on-campus recruiting, and so you get a 4-star, or excuse me, a 3-star into the fold, at least commitment-wise, and the only running back out of the 6 commits that they have right now, so... Josh Heupel trying to build a class, and again, that's when we're starting to get some commits and a lot of folks announcing commit dates as well. So Josh Heupel adding one since June 1 as well. All right, wrap it up. I consider yourself up to date. Absolutely. We're going to take a break, come back, continue with Seth Emerson next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats.
Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Football is not complicated. We can make it seem complicated to make ourselves sound smart, and Lord knows, I'll do that. You can see a 19-word play call and think, oh, my God, how do the players even know what to do? Football's not complicated. Here's how you win, and I'm talking on a particular Saturday. I'm talking over the course of a three-month conference slate. I'm talking over the course of a season, and you get that big, ugly black and gold trophy. Here's how you win, in order, three things: quarterback, offensive line, defensive line. And it's in that order. The reason offensive line is ahead of defensive line, guy doesn't do his job, then you need a six-yard sheriff at linebacker to drag down the running back. Or you need somebody in the secondary to make a play. Or at the worst case, if the guy on the defensive line doesn't do his job, you give up a touchdown. The offensive line doesn't do its job, quarterback gets hurt, and your season is cooked. So that's how you win in football. Under that context, I want to welcome on guy who does a great job covering, in particular, the Georgia Bulldogs at the Athletic. Seth Emerson, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well, Chuck.
I want to talk about Georgia and the offensive line, because no one, and I ask everybody about this, anybody who covers the team or has some sort of rooting interest or whatever, because I'm just fascinated. Georgia has gotten as great and as fervently sought after offensive line recruits as any program in America, save Alabama. And their offensive line has been really good. Why hasn't it been more than really good?
Well, I mean, I guess you could argue that in 2017 it was. I think the year they were supposed to be really good and like one of the best in the country was 2019, and they didn't turn out to be that way. Last year was just kind of a, they were okay.
Sure.
They're good. This year, we'll see. I think it could go two different ways, Chuck, with their O-line this year. They could be really good, or it could be what ultimately holds them back. They've got the talent to be really good, but the question is whether they have five guards. You know, is Jamari Sawyer a guard or a tackle? I think they would love to have him play guard, but they need other people to emerge at tackle. And if that doesn't happen, does Jamari Sawyer become your left tackle and you're just not as good with him at left tackle as you are with him at left guard? And so there's some questions, but the thing I wonder with Georgia and the O-line that we're looking at is are we worried more about the offensive line just in comparison to everything else because they're loaded everywhere else? Or is O-line a real concern?
I think what it is with me is, you know, I'm wanting like that. I want to know who the Jarvis player is on defense, you know, the guy who gets 12 sacks. But I realized two or three years ago that like Jarvis is cutting to 2.5 players, you know, that's just kind of what it is. So yeah. Maybe not one Godzilla, but a bunch of mini Godzillas, you know, because of playing time. Every other position where I'm looking and there is maybe a lack of production, like wide receiver, I can explain that because, you know, you're mashing people on the ground. I can't explain the offense because that's just like first opposite color jersey, latch on, getting turned. Mm-hmm. And Georgia has as great of recruits coming in as anybody, and they put players in the pros in the first round. And I'm just wondering when it's a season full of Saturdays where you're just blasting open holes every week?
Well, they are a lot of weeks. It's just that they're not as, you know, they're not as dominant and I think a lot of times as cohesive as you would hope. There was some inconsistency there. There would be leakage on just the worst possible times against the best teams, and then just at weird times against the not best teams. And so this year it's going to be interesting to watch again with where will Sawyer be. They feel good at center right now about Warren Erickson, but you know, on a team that has recruited all these five stars and top 100 prospects, he's a three star. He might have been a lower rated four star, depending on where you were looking. They're the guy they're trying to get to play left tackle, if he can win the job, is a guy who was a kind of lower rated four star from Rhode Island in Xavier Trust. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're getting ready to go out there with four or five guys the way Alabama is, that it's like, okay, yeah, this guy's a future pro, this guy's a future pro, not worried about him, this guy. Jamari Sawyer is one of those guys. I think Warren McClendon at right tackle is one of those guys. Otherwise, it's guys that frankly don't excite people yet, but those guys are coming in the pike. They're coming in the pipeline. In I'm having a brain fart. Some of these five stars. Broderick Jones is one of them.
Mims.
Mims. Yeah, who just got here.
Lord.
Not Clay Webb. He's another former five star who just he hasn't made that move. I think a lot of fans would be more excited if those guys like Broderick Jones and Mims were winning jobs, but they're not ready yet. They're getting beat out by Justin Schaefer, who's a fifth-year senior, who was a three-star, by Warren Erickson, who's beaten out Cedric Van Pran Granger, who was, I think, a top 100 prospect, and Xavier Truss is still there. So it either means that, like, so the fans then question, like, well, what are the coaches doing? Why aren't they starting these guys who are five-stars? And, well, they're doing what a lot of coaches do. They start more experienced guys. Guys that have seen do it before. So it becomes kind of this interesting kind of push-pull between what fans want and what actually happens out there.
All right, continuing with Seth Emerson from The Athletic, and you're going to break a tie because I've been told by two industry professionals. One says Arik Gilbert, the other says Arik Gilbert. Seth?
I've already always heard Arik, but I haven't covered him for a year. I've only written about him, so I don't know that you should say I break that. I had not even thought about that until you mentioned it.
No.
I have not.
You're
thought
not helping.
To ask anybody.
Not helping.
Yeah, sorry about that.
All right. Well,
I know how to spell it. That's my job.
All right. Well, you can help with this. How did they get Gilbert to say yes to Athens?
He has been so all over the place that I think they're just kind of in the right time at the right place. And it's no accident. I mean, we started to hear about a week in advance that this was going to happen. He just showed up. He enrolled at Georgia, but it didn't just happen. I was actually on vacation when it became official.
Awesome.
When he enrolled. But I had a story in the system that I told my editor, they're going to get Kendrick. They're going to get Gilbert. I just don't know when they're going to announce it. Here are the stories. Publish when it's ready, when it happens. So I knew it was happening. But it was in the works for a while. It may have just been that he had to go to LSU for a year. He had to commit to Florida and just to feel that ultimately he had to come home. He had to stay home. Although, as everyone in your area knows, growing up in Marietta, Athens isn't exactly next door. So he was flirting with Alabama the whole time. You know, Alabama thought they had a shot at him this time. But I think with many of these cases, Kirby Smart and his staff, just a little bit of hard work and a little bit of luck.
George Pickens playing another down for Georgia. What would you have said a month ago, and has that changed?
I don't think it's changed. 50-50. Every day that goes by is – maybe inch the percentage up a little bit. Because
wow.
Every day that goes by that he has not left, you know, he's still around. But he was always going to stay in Athens for a little bit because he can rehab here. He can, you know, he has things available at his disposal at George's practice facility, whether it's the rehab stuff or whatever he needs. But when we start to get to a point where, in order to remain eligible, that he has to go to these classes, he has to go to tutors, he has to do these other things, the longer he still is in Athens, the better, the more chance that he does. Unless, like, one day he just decides, yeah, you know what, I'm probably going to be a first-round pick no matter what. I don't need to go through these classes. I don't need this. I'm going to leave. I'm just going to go. I'm going to sign with an agent and go. For all the, I think, good, positive rule changes that are happening in college athletics, at this point, you still can't sign with an agent and be eligible. So, you know, I still say, like, 50-50. I think health-wise, he'd be there. I think a lot of it depends. I mean, the key is in August when classes start. He's still there. They're keeping him around the program. And the more Georgia goes into its season as a legitimate playoff contender, that brass ring is still out there, and the more likely he's going to stick around. I mean, then he can just ride in, you know, the white knight at the end of the season. Here comes George to help us over the hump.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and I have this category, it's called six times wrong, where I was wrong. I was six times wrong about Demetrius Robertson, and I got my hands up, brother. When he transferred, it was huge news when he went to Cal. It was huge news when he transferred back. It was a whimper over the – I don't even know when it officially happened, but Demetrius Robertson has transferred away from Georgia, and I don't know where he's going or if he's announced, but I was so wrong about his impact.
Yeah, it came out Friday, and I guess I was surprised because he had a good spring. He had a good G-Day. I don't know if it was directly related to Eric Gilbert and just the perception that the targets weren't going to be there for him or what, but it's not something that on paper right now really derails Georgia's season. No, I mean, and that's why probably he's transferring. It's just he's looking around saying, I got one more chance to prove it. And that actually surprised me a little bit because the very fact that he came back for a sixth year rather than try his hand at the pros, I guess probably surprised me a little bit. But he, I guess at this point really decided I need to go somewhere. I need to show my wares for the scouts and decided that he's not going to have the opportunity at Georgia.
What's N'Kobe Dean going to be? Last thing, we got 45 seconds.
I think he's going to be a really good player. I don't know if he'll be exactly Roquan Smith circa 2017, but, I mean, he's got that ability, and we didn't know that Roquan Smith was going to be that guy. Mm-hmm. So I think there's – you mentioned earlier how they build their team. They're really, really good on the D-line. They're pretty good at linebacker. Secondary is the most questions, but on paper they've shored that up with Tyke Smith and Darian Kendrick, and I think Brandon Turner still a good chance he ends up part of the team. And they've got a lot of pure young talent on the roster too. So there's a lot of talent around him that N'Kobe Dean, much like Roquan Smith in 2017, could have a really strong season as kind of the anchor in the middle of the defense.
Fast player with a lot of really smart anticipation. I like watching him play. Yep. Seth, appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Chuck.
All right, Seth Emerson again from The Athletic. And N'Kobe Dean, I always want to include both those in there because I actually talked to Kirby about this. And I was like, man, he's fast. He's like, watch him closer. He said, yes, he has good speed. It's his anticipation. And so I started watching him. I was like, well, his coach should know. And boy, does he.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Appreciate everybody getting in today. If we go back in time to the beginning of the 2020 season, Alabama starts on the road, and with no spring practice and limited workouts and everything else that we all know was true, 38 points on the road in the conference. And by the way, that was the worst they played on offense all year. Now, they scored fewer points against Notre Dame. They could have, that game could have been different. But out of the gate with a brand-new quarterback, how are they going to replace a first-round quarterback and two first-round receivers? Well, 38 points on the road in the conference. And the funny thing is, I'm seeing the exact same questions. How are they going to replace a first-round quarterback, two first-round receivers? A little different this year because of what Miami, the opponent, brings. And that's kind of a fun game because if your offense isn't this out of the gate, pushing 40, and it's not an on-campus game, but if your offense isn't like, Derek King can be like that, potentially. And so it's a more interesting matchup to me than I think most people look at and go, Alabama's going to win. I'm like, yeah, Alabama is going to win, I believe. But it's interesting. Got to look at things. I want to welcome on right now a guy we always love talking to when it comes to Bama football from Bama Online 247. It is Charlie Potter. Charlie, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
Talk about that opening scenario, because Derek King is kind of that quarterback that could keep you in something. You know, he could make a couple of individual plays, and suddenly you look up and Miami has like 21, 24 points. How do you expect the Alabama offense to look this season? And I mean from the get-go, because last year against Missouri, it was great from play one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously going into that 2020 season, you know, Alabama had to replace some big names on offense, but Mac Jones stepped up. You had Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, Najee Harris, so you felt good about that. The offensive line was pretty much intact for the most part after being a finalist for the Joe Moore Award, and they hit the ground running. I mean, that was a big reason for their success, is the way they played offensively. Of course, that had a lot to do with, you know, Mac Jones and his development. You know, Devontae Smith just had an unbelievable season, and they got a lot out of Jalen Waddle whenever he was healthy. And, of course, you know, Najee Harris was a guy that maybe any other year, if you don't have a Devontae Smith on campus, he's higher in the Heisman Trophy voting. So, offensively, they have to replace a lot this year. You lose three starters on the offensive line. Najee's gone, Devontae, Jalen, they're all gone, Mac Jones. And I think they'll be all right at the quarterback position. You know, everybody knows Bryce Young was an elite prospect coming out of California. I think he's, you know, developed nicely in the program. He had a good spring. You know, they have a stable of running backs, even though you lose Najee and you have guys that are entering the transfer portal. It's still one of the best backfields in the SEC, if not the country. I think the big question marks are on the offensive line and at receiver, and more so at receiver than up front, because you're losing four receivers over the last 2 years that were the top 15 draft picks. That's hard to overcome. And I think they have a good thing going in John Mechie, but they're going to have others to step up. I think, you know, bringing in a guy like Jameson Williams from Ohio State, that's big for this offense. He produced, or he, presents speed on the outside. I think they're going to have some younger guys to really step up, though. But you're talking about just what the offense has to do. I think Bryce Young has to be really good from snap one. Like, he's going to have to produce. He's going to have to, you know, come out the gate really strong. And I think he's capable of that. I think they can, you know, get the offensive line meshed enough around him where he can play well, and they have the running backs and the tight ends to lean on. But, you know, he's going to have to make his receivers better, put them in position, and he's going to have to play really well coming out of the gate.
Continuing with Charlie Potter, again, Bama Online. I saw, I'm trying to remember, maybe it was Lindy's or at one of the magazines had Jaleel Billingsley as second-team all-conference tight end. And I know that I've asked you about him before. First of all, that kid's not a tight end. I don't know what – they call him whatever they want. He caught 18 passes last year, and I look at him and I'm like, yeah, I see how someone could vote for him to be first or second team all conference. He is such a just an intriguing looking kid at that size, and then the way he moves.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, I mean, he really wasn't utilized until halfway through the season. Yeah. I think he stepped up in the Kentucky game because Miller Forrestall missed that game with a couple of injuries and just took off from there. And yeah, I think, you know, I talk about the wide receiver position being a question mark, but something Alabama can fall back on. And, you know, with Bill O'Brien's experience in New England, I think that will help them is the fact they have Billingsley and a guy like Cameron Latou at the position. But I think Billingsley, yeah, I mean, outside of Jalen Wydermyer at Texas A&M, I think, you know, he's one of the best tight ends in the conference. He is a guy that he can move all over the formation. I think they'll split him out wide a lot to try to maybe create some mismatches in the slot or things like that. But, no, I mean, he's a legit weapon. I think he can, you know, if he can improve as a blocker and be more consistent in that regard, he's a guy that the sky's the limit for. He's someone that could, you know, potentially end up in the first round just because, you know, last year you obviously had Kyle Pitts, you had Kenny Yeboah at Ole Miss and Wydermyer at A&M. But beyond those three, I mean, even with just the limited sample size, there was something that everybody could see was special in Jahlil Billingsley. So I think he's in for a big season, and it's nice to have someone like that when you're having to replace so many, you know, weapons on the outside and at running back.
All right, there was a time, and this might have been like 7-8 years ago now, where whoever the starter was in the secondary was hurt, and so Landon Collins got put in as a freshman, and he won SEC Defensive Player of the Week. And I was like, there you go, folks. Was it Sunseri maybe missed a game?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, there you go, folks. That's what depth does for you. You have a freshman who's never started. He has to start. He gets SEC Defensive Player of the Week. Talk about at the star position, because – Brian Branch, there were times during the early part of the, or throughout the season, I was like, man, what a good-looking young player. And I'm like, oh, yeah, the other kid in front of him, same class, Malachi Moore, he's even better. He's a freshman All-American. It's just unreal depth. And just, like, drill down on that one position as an example.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to pass the time in the offseason, I've been doing the top 25 most important players. And it's a cop-out. I hate doing this. But I've listed them both, like, at the same number. They're going to be coming up in my rankings. Yeah. Because the interesting dynamic with those two is the star position was, you know, a big talking point going into the 2020 season, because Shaheem Carter was moving on. And he's somebody that Nick Saban's praised a bunch of times just for his intelligence. And that star position is a really important position in Nick Saban's defense. But, you know, coming into preseason camp, obviously, the last year there was no spring practice. The summer was all screwed up and everything like that. But going into the preseason, at least early on, Brian Branch was the guy's star. I think he had a little bit of a setback. I'm not sure if it was injury or COVID-related. I don't really remember. But that opened the door for Malachi Moore. And he started every game until he got hurt in the SEC championship game and missed the college football playoff, which is when Brian Branch stepped in for him and played really well. And this spring, Malachi Moore didn't really do much. You know, I think it's a back injury for him. And so they're just, you know, taking it easy with those spring practices. They know what he can do. And, you know, it's better to just rest him. And Brian Branch played really well in the spring. It's almost a flip side of what happened in the preseason. So I think there's going to be some competition there. Both of those guys are going to be in the secondary. I think they're your star and your money, and the money rolls that sixth defensive back when Alabama goes dime, because their safety spots are pretty set with Jordan Battle and DeMarco Helms. But those two guys, I think, are going to be the future of the secondary. They can move around. I think once the other guys leave from the safety spots, they can move back and be more of those center fielders. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talent there, and they just keep bringing in guys that are talented at the safety spot. A guy like Terrion Arnold's coming in, and he's someone that, you know, on most teams could probably find a role as a true freshman. But with the talent and the experience they have at the safety spot and there in the slot at star and money, it's a wealth of riches for Alabama. And I think Malachi Moore and Brian Branch, like I said, are the future of the secondary in Tuscaloosa.
All right, two things I want you to talk about. Saban making Real Reichard a priority in recruiting, and then how it was paid off, because that kid was amazing last year, and nobody pays attention to him because he's, quote, just the kicker. Well, I'm going to tell you, like, place kicker, there might be a national championship that Alabama – now, you got six, but there might be a national championship Alabama has with Saban that they don't because place kicker. What I want to point out is there was another player at another kicker or punter, and I'm just telling you, like, personal story here. And when Kirby went to Georgia, Saban – I mean, you know how he was with kickers and punters. He'd true love them from the beginning and then just kind of disappear until the very end and say, well, do you want to come on and be a preferred walk-on? Kirby started giving out scholarships, and so I was told Will Reichard is going to be the kicker that Nick Saban prioritizes more than any specialist since he's been in Tuscaloosa. Talk about him changing that attitude and then also the performance, the follow-through with Reichard.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, yeah, Will Rocker had a great season last year, and so much so that one of the biggest talking points this spring in the A-Day game was he missed three field goals, and people were just freaking out because that was something Alabama fans could lay their head on the pillow last year and not have to worry about the place-kicking situation because it has been a bit of an enigma over the last several years. But he had a fantastic season, especially bouncing back from the injury. But, no, I mean, I want to say it was during a Hey Coach appearance. So he's sitting there beside Eli Gold and, you know, talking to people on the radio and things like that. And Nick Saban was talking about a conversation he had with Gene Stallings. And Coach Stallings had said something about, you know, you got to find a kicker. And this was when Will Reichard was hurt. And he's like, well, we have the best kicker in the country. He's just injured right now. So Nick Saban is, I think, seeing, you know, the potential for Will Reichard. And he, you know, like I said, it has been an enigma. So I think that the specialist positions are not touchy, but it's just they're inconsistent. And you can tell when Nick Saban has a guy that he likes and he knows is special, just the way he talks about him. And he talks the way about Will Reichard. I'll never forget, it was when J.K. Scott first got on campus. And I think he was maybe at the top of the depth chart or performing well in either the spring or the preseason. And someone asked him about him. And Nick Saban just said, well, have you seen him kick? Like, it. When he has a guy, you know, and that's what Will Reichard is. So, yeah, I think that that has been a priority. And when it goes to specialists and scholarships, I mean, I think that just the inconsistencies may be a reason for that. But when they find a good one, I think Alabama actually just landed a commitment from an Australian punter last night, and he's going to be on scholarship. So it doesn't happen often, but when it does, I think you know that Nick Saban sees something special in those guys.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think I'm overstating this. It hasn't been as good since Scott left. And that's been, what, the 17 season?
Yeah, I mean, punting has definitely been up and down. There's been bright spots. I think Ty Pirine a couple of years ago was off to a good start, and then he had the botched snap against LSU in the game where LSU won and obviously went on to win a national championship. And then, you know, last year they played a few guys, and it was actually Charlie Scott, who's JK's younger brother, that closed out the season. But they tried to, I think, get him back on campus, but you know, he has his military obligations. And earlier this offseason, they brought in Jack Martin, transfer from Troy, who I believe might have led the nation in punting average last year. And then now they go and flip a kid from Ole Miss, a kid from Australia, who I think is going to be on scholarship and be on campus this fall. It's still something I think they're trying to iron out. But yeah, I mean, punting has been a bugaboo since J.K. Scott left, and I think they're just still looking for a guy to maybe not to replicate that, but to go out and do a close enough job to that.
Charlie Potter's great stuff, man. Thanks for coming on.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, certainly appreciate it. Yeah, it's I think it's called Pro Kick or Pro Kick USA. It's an academy in Australia, and they take Australian rules football players and they teach them what to do with an American football. And I've heard it described as if your coach, for instance, none of us are coaches. So if you're a fan and your coach isn't exploring the idea of an Australian punter, the style of punting, then it's almost like you're playing golf and you're refusing to consider one of the clubs in the bag. Now, I'll say that maybe about the style of punting, it's got its place, and it's gaining popularity. The punt formation, rejiggering the punt formation has led to more issues than it could ever solve if you use the current punt formations for the next 100 million years. It couldn't finally bring more benefit than the punt formation isn't something that needs to be changed, folks. I mean, something like scrambled eggs, you know what you could do right now? Government grant and go to a place, I don't know, go to Duke. That's a great research facility. Go to Duke with a grant and say, here's a grant to develop higher quality, better tasting scrambled eggs. Do you know what the truth about some things is? There are things that right now are as good as they will ever get. Scrambled eggs, we have discovered the best way to eat a scrambled egg. We already know it. There's nothing else to discover. Punt formation, there was nothing else to discover, I promise. I have seen more rushers coming straight up the gut through three up backs, not just one. I was watching a Penn State-Alabama game growing up, and a guy named Ralph Giacomaro is a punter for Penn State. And it was in Legion Field, and he punted the ball. He hit his up back in the rear end with football. There was only one. They've got three up backs now. And poor communication. Fewer, at least, congregated on the line. I don't understand why the punt formation was something that needed to be tinkered with. The punting style, okay, I entertain that, and I do see some value in there. But, again, punting to me is something where you're almost creating as much of an opportunity for an issue as you're really solving anything.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I think it gives every team a chance. I think the format still, you know, is going to be able to hold the bowls in place, which is, I think, so important in our history. I think it, you know, if a team has a couple of early season slip ups, it allows you to still be in it. I think it'll improve the number of opt outs. I mean, I think there's a lot of you know, great points about it.
Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma head coach. I think it's more opportunity. Everybody always had an opportunity. If you were a group of five, you could overschedule and win all your games. If you were a power five, except for my team, 1 year, every single time a power five team won all their games, they got included. They got a chance to play for the national championship except for one time, and it was my team, and I still defended the system. So Lincoln Riley saying all this stuff about, more teams get to – well, yeah, because there's 12 instead of four. So, of course, more teams get in there. But more teams – I said it's – It was going to happen, and it's 12, and I think we have identified that you thought it was a flaw. I mentioned this the other day. It's actually a feature. You think it's a bug. It's actually a feature that the conversation about, well, why don't seeds 1, 2, 3, and 4 get to host a home playoff game? I hope that can be addressed. It'll get addressed. Get addressed when it goes to 16. And somehow – This is the inequity argument. We're going to make things equal for Alabama at 1 by making them play another game that we've put on campus in Tuscaloosa. Isn't the bonus for Alabama that they're not playing at all? Tuscaloosa or anywhere else? Just silliness. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just talking about on-field competitiveness. You're talking about, like, I don't know, Notre Dame gets to host a home game. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. I was just on about on the field. So, yes, Lincoln Riley, and everything he said about the coming 12-team playoff is absolutely accurate. And I'm going to count that as my closing argument. Brought to you by the law offices of Alexander, Shannara, and Associates. Wherever you are in the Deep South, it could be Georgia or Florida, Tennessee, Alabama. If you need legal expertise, you need Alexander, Shannara, and Associates. Dan, how are you today?
Well, you know, the thing is, too, is I think that this really – and not often do we see things change – in any sport and say, well, that really benefits everyone. Like, I think, for example, we could say in a certain sport like baseball, for example, let's just throw that out there. The universal DH benefits everyone because everybody wants to be able to have more offense, be able to put more runs on the board. And a way that you can do that is taking the bat out of a guy's hand who hasn't swung a bat probably in about 15 years of his baseball career. So that's good news there. The other part of it as well with this is, yes, we do finally get to see where everybody was out there saying, what about Cincinnati? Why doesn't Cincinnati have an opportunity? And then the opportunity that Cincinnati did have, they lost to a team that people can say Georgia either put their best foot forward or they didn't.
Marginally motivated Georgia team.
Marginally motivated.
And not even their starting 22.
But still won the game. Yep. That's the whole point. And everybody who wanted
to. Can I say, you know what Georgia was last year? Better than Auburn in 17.
Absolutely.
When they played UCF.
More healthy, for sure. And they're even with the players that decided to play.
Absolutely. You know what? That's not the point you're making, but in the bowl game against, again, a marginally motivated Georgia team, at least they came through and won. They got the field goal at the end.
Yeah, so, I mean, it would have been definitely a different going into the offseason for Georgia had they not won that. But the point is that no matter what, the cream will always rise to the top. Are we going to get every once in a while a 12 seed maybe breaking through and winning a couple of games? Sure, we will. But eventually, the better team is going to win. That is still going to happen. Now there's just more chances for us to kind of see the wild card round, if you will, of college football, and then be able to maybe even see the, I don't know, what was it 1997 or 98 Jacksonville Jaguars that made it all the way to the AFC Championship game, and people said, who is this team doing this? Yeah, that might happen every once in a while, but just like we see in the NCAA tournament, even with all the teams, the best teams still find their way to the Final Four, and a lot of times find their way winning it all. For the most part, yes, like I said, it is going to be good for everybody. But for those of you also as well saying, well, it's going to dilute the product, I don't think you're going to be seeing that, because the teams that are going to be there will still be there at the end, because in any sport, especially football, if you have better talent, you're usually going to be in the better position to win the game.
Yeah, and the more you extend out a season from a one-game scenario, which used to be a bowl game, to a two-game scenario, which has been the playoffs since 14, to now potentially a three-game scenario. Yeah, when you start unfolding all of these, you know, mathematical possibilities, then it starts to get a multiple more difficult for a Cincinnati, Tulane, et cetera, to get that dub in the national championship game or even reach it. You're not going to win three straight. Just not going to happen. All right, wraps it up on a Monday, folks. Thank you for joining us. 22 hours. Back tomorrow. More college football conversation. Chuck Oliver Show.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.